straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought Sports Fans, episode 66, powered by Hook'em.com, brought to you by Bud Light. Kirk Bowles, we both should have just walked in with fishing reels today because we landed the biggest fish yet.
A whopper.
A whopper. Tom Herman, University of Texas football coach, decided to join us, and man, we are so excited. Joining us via phone, Coach, how are you today?
It's going great, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Wait, are you having fun yet?
Am I having fun? Absolutely. Yeah. This is, it's, you know, I firmly believe that hard work and fun are not mutually exclusive. I really do believe that you can work really, really hard, and if it's something you love, it's you're going to have fun doing it. And, you know, it's the old Confucius adage that if you find a profession you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And, you know, this is the life that we have chosen, and it is fun. It is exhausting. It is hard work, but it is very rewarding.
Well, and you know the track record of University of Texas football. You've been here before under Mack Brown, and, you know, they've had three straight losing seasons, and Texas fans are just starving for Texas to beat Texas again. And I'm sure you get it everywhere you go. Is how long is it going to take to get Texas back to being Texas?
I do get that quite a bit. And the answer is, you know, in all honesty, I don't know. And I think we're headed in the right direction. You know, I haven't played in the Big 12, so I don't know other than Oklahoma. You know, I haven't played as a head coach any other school, and so I do know a little bit about them and their talent level. And I think, you know, our starting 22, I think we can compete in most every game. You know, depth is definitely a concern, and we've got to continue to develop that. But, you know, I this year, you know, I was thinking about, you know, calling you guys and getting some questions, and it's amazing. You know, we've been here 8 months,
right?
And to transform an entire program and have these, you know, crazy lofty expectations in the span of 8 months, I think is a premature. I think, you know, our expectations are always going to be higher than anybody else's out there in the general public or in the media, but we also understand that this is a process, and this is not something that happens overnight. But, you know, if you can turn your TV on a Saturday afternoon or come to the game live and say that is the hardest playing, hardest hitting, most accountable and well coached team that I've seen, then I'd say we're headed in the right direction.
Well, I know, Tom, they got you because you're a winner, and you've been part of staffs that went 60-6 over the last 5 years. What I've noticed is you have a real disdain for losing, and you've kind of instilled that in the team with little in practice competitions. The winners get steaks, the losers don't get steak. Those kind of things. Just sending little messages that winning is the only answer. How do you think that that's going to help develop your culture of winning here?
I think it's twofold. One, you know, the early benefits of it, and early, I mean, in their football career and in our program, you know, I think Vince Lombardi said it best, winning is a habit, but so is losing. And when you lose 21 games in 3 years, they're, you know, human nature is to become numb to losing. And that's the biggest thing that we're combating right now, is that losing is not okay. Losing is awful. Losing is unacceptable. Losing means that you did not do your job when people were counting on you to do your job. And it doesn't mean you, I didn't ever say the word failure. You're not a failure. You haven't failed. You've lost in said competition. And the good thing is, just like during the season, there's always next week. But if the losing doesn't bother you, if it doesn't eat you up inside, then, you know, what's your motivation the following week or the following day at practice? But I think probably the bigger picture, to be honest with you, Cedric, is life is a competition. And, I read a quote from Bill Gates. I'm like spewing quotes right now, you know. But he said the same thing, you know, that your schools and your little leagues might have banned competition and keeping score, but in life they don't. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit there. And I firmly believe that. And it's really in any endeavor, you know. I tell guys all the time, you want to be the CEO, be the most, you know, well-respected CEO of a company. You want to be in the Peace Corps, go be the best volunteer the Peace Corps has ever seen. You want to be a middle school English teacher, great. Go be the best middle school English teacher in the history of the world. And so I just think that those, you know, that competitive desire and fostering those skills to compete every day and everything that we do is something that'll help these young men throughout their lives.
What, and where does that come from, Tom? I mean, you have it, you ooze it, you know, is that competition. You want to win every single day, every single hour, and you have the phrase, win the day. And I don't know, is that something from your childhood, from your parents? Where did that come from, that desire and intensity and passion for winning?
Oh, I don't know. I've always, I was raised on the value of hard work, so that certainly was something that was instilled in me at a young age. But I fell in love with the intoxication of winning. I just, winning is intoxicating, and winning at higher levels is even intoxicating, and winning in a very painful and disciplined team sport such as football is even more intoxicating. And so winning becomes like a drug for me, and I wanted it all the time. And ever since I was a kid, I don't know about you guys, but I had to compete for my wife to get her out to go out on a date with me, on a date with me, and we became, they didn't have Facebook official back then, but when we officially kind of started dating, I kind of puffed my chest out, like, yeah, I got what I wanted. I won the competition. And the same is true in everything that we've done or that I've done is, I want to be the best at it, and I hope our players do too.
Well, I bet you were a sore loser in Little League, weren't you?
I was sore loser to me is that Tommy helmets and balls and cussing teammates. I bottled a lot of that stuff up internally, and I made it fuel my preparation. In weeks and in the subsequent weeks and days and months and games.
Right. And, when you've been here, like you said, about 8 months, and I wondered if there was much culture shock when you got here, Tom.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, it hit him in the face like with a frying pan, I mean, it was one that was not met with a lot of resistance. It was foreign. It was different. It was a lot of things that they weren't used to, and it was very, 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 very difficult. But as I've said before, these kids have been part of the worst 3-year stretch in the history of Texas football, and they understood very early the necessity for change. They believed that change was necessary, and that we needed to do things differently. But when then that change becomes difficult or painful or inconvenient, that's when the real coaching and the real teaching kick in, as to teaching them the how of that change, and the how to push through adversity, and the how to push through pain and to push through inconvenience, and to give yourself to your teammates and not be self centered, and so that's what we've been doing for the 8 months. The belief was there, and that the understanding for the necessity of change was there, and it's been a daily education on how to accomplish that.
Well, I know it's really hard in football to win without a good quarterback, and you've had some great ones: Braxton Miller, J.T. Barrett, Cardale Jones, and most recently my fellow Tylerite, Greg Ward Jr. You got Shane Buechel and Sam Ehlinger on the roster, and they're good young quarterbacks. How much potential do they have, and what are the chances they can reach the great heights that those other quarterbacks took you to?
I think both of them have tremendous potential. I saw a stat the last five seasons, quarterbacks, either playing under me as an offensive coordinator or as a head coach, averaged 3,200 yards passing, 28 touchdowns in the air, and 1,200 yards rushing, and 16 touchdowns on the ground. So been used to very productive quarterbacks, and this system definitely runs through the quarterback. And you know, you don't win at the elite level without a great quarterback. I mean, look no further than Deshaun Watson and Jalen Hurts, and before that in the playoffs, you're talking about Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, and I mean, the list goes on and on and on. The kid at Washington, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. The teams that are doing it at the elite level are doing it with great quarterback play, and I think, you know, we're not a finished product by any stretch. You know, we've hit a wall basically because there's so much offense in, and there's so much defense in that he's seen. But I think, you know, as things start to calm down and we don't install and we just continue to rep what we know, I see a lot of potential in both those guys.
And off the field, Tom, you're just killing it in recruiting, and you're already a top five by every measurement of the commitments you guys are getting, and you haven't coached a game yet. Do you attribute that mostly to, obviously, your charisma? But I think, you know, winning 22 games at Houston, and then you got your new lockers as well. Have you even surprised yourself how people outside have bought in so quickly?
Not really. We set all kinds of records at Houston with that Ballyhoo class that included, I think, three ESPN top 300 players and the only five-star in the history of recruiting rankings to sign with a non-Power 5 school. And most of those kids, almost the entire class, was committed before we had ever coached a game, ever. As a head coach, the entire staff together, you name it. And so we were able to do that because you sell a vision and you form relationships and you make kids understand. I never want to sell something to a kid that I don't think is best for him, and I never would. And in fact, most of the time, you know, if the University of Texas offered a kid and I was at a different place, I might say, hey, you know, that's a pretty good offer. You might want to think about that. And so I think being honest, developing relationships with them, having great relationships with the high school coaches, great relationships with the parents. And at this level, you know, the second time around, when you talk about turning a program around, you're right, Kirk, that there's now the testimony to back it up. Whereas
right.
when we did it at Houston, it was more of a vision and relationships. Well, here it's vision, relationships, and oh, by the way, we were 6-0 against top 25 teams, 3-0 against top 10 teams, and 2-0 against top 3 teams at the University of Houston, 2- and 3-star players. And so I think that resonates. And, you know, with us being very regional too, where we came from, these kids, they know a lot of the kids that we coached at Houston, and they watched a lot of our games that we played at Houston, and so I think that familiarity too plays a part as well.
Well, I know before you became the head coach at Houston, you were already known as one of the best young offensive minds in college football. Now, most of Texas's problems last season happened on the defensive end. You have a junior linebacker by the name of Malik Jefferson, who was a freshman All-American. Now he's He took a little dip in production last season. What kind of camp has he had, and how important will he be in the return to relevance of Texas?
Yeah, we've prided ourselves on defense at the University of Houston as well, and extremely productive linebacker play there as well, and so much so that Landon Roberts was a 1-year starter at the University of Houston, but he was trained so well by Todd Orlando that he was drafted to the New England Patriots, and by the middle of the season he was their starting Mike linebacker as a rookie for the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. So we've had a lot of production at those positions, and Malik has grown immensely. Obviously he's physically grown. He's developed. He's stronger. There's more lean muscle mass on his body, but he's grown leaps and bounds in terms of his physicality and his understanding of this defense and of his leadership. I think he's taking a very active role in being a leader and being a great teammate, and couldn't be happier where he's at right now. That's going to have to translate on Saturdays, obviously, but all signs point in the right direction in terms of his development.
Well, and the last question before we let you go, Tom, I know it's kind of been of a dream job for you since you were a GA here, so I assume you're going to stay here forever, 30 or 40 years, correct?
I don't know that I got 30, 40 years left on the bench, let alone coaching. So I'm going to be here as long as they'll have me, Kirk. You're right. This is a dream job of mine, and one that was 18 years in the making, 19 years in the making. It was, I got engaged to my wife when I was a graduate assistant here and was exposed to big-time football at this place, and started my path in coaching in the state of Texas at the University of Texas. And so it's, there was only probably 3 or 4 jobs that I would have left a great job that I had already have for, and this was one of them, because it truly holds a special place in my heart. And I believe that we have the resources, the fan base, and the recruiting base to compete on a national level year in and year out. But I think 30 to 40 years might be a stretch. But
well, Tom, I appreciate you sparing a little time with us. We know you got to get back to film study and practice, but thanks for joining us in our podcast. And I wish you the best of luck this year.
You got it, guys. Appreciate you having me. Look more.
Thanks, Tom.
Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Bye. Tom Herman coming strong, Duck, just like we knew he would. Easily the most intense coach I've ever been around, and I've been doing this for a while. You've been doing it for even longer, sir.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. He brings the fire and the passion, and like nobody else I've ever been around. And it's interesting because he's only been a head coach for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. But he's always been that way. He's always been that way.
And just the way he talks and the preparation and how meticulous he is, you would think he's been a head coach for 20 years.
He's
not
spewing,
two.
Spewing quotes and
quote, he's
stats.
A quote machine. Remember the other day, Woody, Alexander the Great. He was quoting him, and
he corrects. And if a sports writer asks a question and doesn't have the exact number, he will correct.
Oh, him. He corrected. I think Brian Davis said something about Shane Buechele's stats, and he had exact amount of passing yardage that Shane Buechele had last year. He's got amazing memory.
Oh yeah, he does, and he's a smart guy. And let me ask you this though, he's worked for some of the best coaches in the game.
Mm-hmm.
He was a GA under Mack Brown. He was Urban Meyer's trusted assistant at Ohio State. He comes across as much more Urban Meyer than Mack Brown
to
me.
No question about it.
Very intense, combative at times, doesn't mind getting in your face.
He's feisty.
He's a feisty guy, very intense. Do you think that that style of coaching, and we saw Urban Meyer have to step aside for a spell for his health, mm-hmm. to rechannel his energy, because he was burning that candle at both ends.
But Nick Saban hasn't.
Maybe Nick Saban's just maybe a different beast. But Tom Herman, how long can he keep this up? He's 42 years old, so he's a young man, but how long can you keep it up with that intense coaching style?
Well, you are who you are, and we all know that, and he's not going to change the way he operates, and it's interesting. I mean, his recruiting has just taken off. They've got 17 commitments, got another one from a tight end this week. They're number two in the nation in recruiting. He hadn't coached a game here at Texas yet.
People are buying into his vision.
People are buying in.
And like I've said many times before, and if you haven't read Kirk Bowles' locker column, you need to go on to hook'em.com and read it. It's a good read. 17-year-old boys in our country love shiny new things.
Yes.
And Tom Herman's a shiny new coach. Texas has some shiny new lockers, a shiny new weight room, and most important, Duck, a shiny new vision, bringing Texas football back to national relevance. The guys that he's recruiting, very few of them remember Vince Young wrecking shop. That was all the way back in 2005. And so if you're recruiting a 17-year-old kid, he just got out of diapers about a year before VY did that to USC. So those guys have YouTube, but they don't really remember that game. Their parents do, but they don't.
And he's coming in at the perfect time, you know, following Charlie Strong after three losing seasons and a 16-21 record and a loss to Kansas, if I remember correctly. And we asked him, well, what was the culture shock like? And he kind of said, oh, my God. But he was talking more about the players than himself.
Yeah, because he knew what he was getting
into.
He's been here.
Because he reads the papers. He knows what their record
is. He watches Sports
Center. And he acted like the players have been like hit in the face with a frying pan. He said it was foreign. It was different. And I like the competitive nature of him. He's made everything a competition, whether it's a push-up drill or keeping your area clean, anything like that. And you mentioned the lockers, Cedric. There's a little piece of me, because I'm very old, that think, well, does this contribute to entitlement? Like, this team hadn't done squat. They've had like four losing seasons in the last 7 years. Texas is not Texas anymore. But he looks at it differently because he doesn't mind taking things away. You mentioned shiny new things. He banned them from the players' lounge for 2 days because it was messy. So I don't think, you know, he's just going to give them, and not expect anything back, especially in terms of results and accountability.
I don't think he's coddling them.
I don't either.
I think those lockers are about recruiting mostly.
Yes.
Now, I know the current players love them, and I know some guys that used to work and play there tell me about how great that locker room is looking. But I think it's about the guys that he's trying to get into the program, not the guys that are already here. They've already started to buy into his vision. He's trying to attract more elite athletes because that's what he's going to need to turn this thing around.
Does the recruiting success so quickly surprise you? I mean, 17 commitments, number two in the nation, and I think he's got like 11 seniors on this team.
It doesn't really surprise me, number one, because Tom Herman is a bulldog, and he gets after whatever he's trying to do. He is
a grinder.
Nose to the grindstone type of guy. Number two, I think this entire coaching staff has mastered the social media game, Doug.
We hired a graphics director first month on the job.
Everybody's tweeting. It's all propaganda. It's Texas this, Texas that. These kids see it and they start to go, man, I like what's going on in Austin. Did you see those new lockers? Oh, well, no, I didn't see them. Well, check it out on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out on the TexasSports.com. They got videos all over that place. Check out Hook'em.com. They're writing about those lockers. So he has kind of embraced the idea of selling his program via social media, not just beating the bricks and knocking on doors and visiting living rooms, but getting into those cell phones of those kids and those laptop computers. And I think that the parents are also, you know, the parents of these kids are a social media generation. So you're talking about parents in their 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s.
Mm-hmm.
They understand the social media aspect. It's not like it was when we were growing up, when it was all about door to door. So I think Tom Herman has grasped the cyber part of recruiting as well as the old school part.
What part has he not embraced? I mean, you talk about attention to detail. Every little thing. Remember when our beat writer Brian Davis said, "Are you involved in the pregame music?" He said, "A lot."
Of course, and he wants the rap music that these kids listen to.
They
in
were
their
cranking
cars.
It up at practice this
cranking
week.
Cranking up 50 Cent, cranking up Drake. Weekend and Drake. And see, and the thing is, they want that. It's not what the fans want. And no. Tom has figured out that there's going to be some old school people wondering why Willie Nelson's not playing.
There'll be some pregame.
But if the Texas Longhorns are 7-0, you know what? You can wait to listen to Willie in your car, and you can suffer through some rap music in pregame.
Would you rather listen to George Strait and go 5-7, or listen to Drake and go 10-2?
You'd be surprised at some of those answers. You'd be surprised. I'll take Drake.
Yeah, I think Tom Herman will too. And you hit on about the intensity. Is it? I remember in the spring I asked him, "Do you want the players to fear you?" And he said, "Yeah,
I hope so."
And then he kind of thought about it a little bit.
Tried to take it back.
And he kind of went, "Well, how's this going to play recruiting?" No. And he went, "No, it's more respect and know their results and accountability and consequences if you don't compete to the highest level and work as hard as you need to be working."
And what you're not mentioning is that same question along those lines was asked of him in Frisco at Big 12 Media Days. And this time he did not back off of it. He wanted, he goes, "Well, I hope they fear me, because I know that he knows that only winning mm-hmm. will cure what ails Texas. Nothing else will cure it. And if he has to be a hard A,
he's a taskmaster,
to get it done, He's not afraid of that.
Aren't the best coaches
for Urban
fear?
Meyer. It seems like
Belichick,
Saban, Meyer. Those are some of the great coaches that ever lived. Jimmy Johnson,
right?
He was completely feared. He fired a guy during the Christmas holidays right before his birthday, just to send a message. He left a on an airplane trip. The team was on the trip, and Michael Irvin was running to the plane. They took off and left Michael Irvin to take mm-hmm. a passenger plane. He was not afraid to ruffle some feathers to get his point across, and I think that's what Tom Herman's trying to do.
And the players sense that. The players see that. And as long as you're treating everybody with the same discipline, not that you treat every player the same, but he knows the consequences and the rewards that are there, and they're going to be meted out fairly. So, I think, he's not a player's coach like Charlie was.
No.
But Charlie
They love Charlie, but I don't think they fear Charlie.
They love Charlie too much, and they didn't play hard
enough.
They
loved him enough to love on him, but they didn't love him enough to show up when they had to have it. You don't lose at Kansas and then show up 50 strong at a Monday presser when you didn't show up in Lawrence. That cost Charlie his job. I think nice guys don't always finish last, but a lot of them do.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them do. And it was great to have Tom Herman drop in on our little podcast here.
And from what we hear, he's going to be doing it every year preseason. Hopefully we can stay gainfully employed so we can interview Tom Herman as he gets this thing turned around. Kirk, the Major League Baseball community was saddened by the passing of two players, Darren Dalton, the catcher, longtime catcher for the Philadelphia Phillies, and one of our favorites, Austinite Don Baylor, passes away at age 68. I got to meet him a couple of years ago when Hank Aaron was in town speaking, and Don Baylor, what a prince of a guy, great career, 79. MVP, and moved back to Austin to live out his later years. What does that say about Don?
Well, he was a class guy, as you said, just a wonderful human being. And, I probably have known Don for about 25 years. And the last time I had a long conversation with him was when we inducted him into the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. And I was given the privilege of informing him that we had elected him in. And it was he was at a game at playing the Houston Astros, and we sat in the dugout probably for almost an hour just talking about life, about baseball. And he's one of the most giving people I've ever been around, just a true gentleman, a credit to the game, and just a powerful presence. You think of Don Baylor,
mm-hmm.
you think of power. He was a feared power hitter.
He's a big dude.
Big dude. What a specimen. I talked to Ben Crenshaw this week about him, and he talked about what a specimen he was. He developed a lot quicker. You know, he played football. He could have come to Texas and played for the Texas Longhorns had he not been such a great baseball player.
I think he made the right decision.
Yeah, I think he did. Played 19 seasons, became one of the first six African-American managers in the game, and the first manager of the expansion Colorado Rockies, and took them to a playoff. And he's a guy that never changed. You know, he was always the same, real positive, upbeat, and you know, I just can't say enough good things about
him. You know, and he was a guy that could do it all on a baseball field. He was a big guy, 338 home runs is nothing to shake a stick at. 285 stolen bases. That's not bad for a guy that could do it all. I just remember from my conversation with him, just had this quiet grace about him, but a toughness right under the surface you know, he was not a guy that you wanted to mess with. But if you're talking about Austin athletes, Doug, I mean, his name has got to be in the pantheon of greatest athletes to come out of here.
Oh, no question
Hollywood Henderson, Night Train Lane, Drew Brees, Houston Street, and Don Baylor.
He's got to be right up there.
He's right there.
You know, and you mentioned the toughness that he had. He's a guy who crowded the plate and set a major league record beginning
always
to get by pitches.
Always got hit.
Until Craig Biggio broke that record. And one thing I'll never forget, years and years ago, you know, I talked to his father, George Baylor, and he said, one thing I taught him, he said, never rub it. Never show the pitcher that it hurt. And
that's toughness.
That is toughness, and he exuded toughness. He was one of the first of a handful of African American students who went to O. Henry Middle School, and then he went to Austin High. He was one of the first. Al Matthews, the great defensive back who played for the Green Bay Packers, another great Austinite, you know, played for the Packers and for Seattle. San Francisco for a year. He was a classmate of Don's at Austin High. And, you know, that's some serious talent there. You think, you know, Ben Crenshaw, Al Matthews, and Don Baylor, I mean, that's a pretty impressive list. And Ben said he went to class with him both in middle school and high school. And he always said what a specimen he was. He was just – and he just got along with everybody. He just had that great personality and just live life the way you need to live it.
You know what, Duck? I think he was living proof, and I live by this code too. I think you get out of life what you put into it, and you're going to be judged on how you treat people.
Yes.
I've never heard someone say a bad thing about
never.
Don Baylor.
Never.
Just a great man who went to work every day, put in his 8 hours, excelled at his job, had fun doing it, and most important, had the respect of the people he played with and against.
Right, just universally admired, and you know, fought the good fight with cancer, and now gone at age 68, and he will be missed.
All right, sports fans, that will do it for episode 66 of On Second Thought. Gotta give thanks to Tom Herman for calling in to the dungeon. For the Duck, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.